This episode is brought to you by Upstart, Stitch Fix, and Hims. More on that later. Let's get into the do.
You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're doing it over here at Studio Jeans at your mom's house. I'm Ryan Sickler. Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. Minneapolis coming your way here in a couple of weeks. August 1st through the 3rd, I'm at the House of Comedy in Minnesota. Then back home in Baltimore at the Famous again, September 14th. Get your tickets on ryansickler.com. Everything's available for you there. And I just want to say thank you. Every week I say thank you to you. I mean it. I get all the messages. I get everything. And I see you out there building the fan base. I see you subscribing to your mom's house YouTube channel. Make sure you're doing that. But as far as the show goes, look, everything's at thehoneydewpodcast.com. You can get your merch there. Sign up for the email list there. All of it's there. Just go there. And what else I want to say up here? Well, so I still have to read. I did 90% of that without looking at that motherfucking thing. I really did. I'm proud of myself over here. if you're new to the show.
Now cover the good eye and do it again.
Yeah, I got to do this. This is my reader right here. If you're new to the show, as I always like to say, what we do over here is highlight the low lights. All right. We try to find a little bit of that light in the darkness and have a good time with it. These are the stories behind the storytellers. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to have my guest here today. Please welcome Adam Ferreira.
Thank you.
Thank you for being so here, bro. Look at that. Got clap from the booth, brother.
Clap from the booth.
It's a booth clap, my man.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkes. Put the gun down.
Well, I appreciate you being here.
Nice to be here, baby.
And please, before we begin, I know you want to plug some things. Get it all out of the way.
Oh, my plugs?
Yeah,
thank you.
At the
we're
top,
doing it right up front.
Yeah, we're comedian friendly here. We're here to support the comedian.
That's so kind of you.
Yeah.
You're like a compassionate hooker. Yeah. Look, we're going to have fun, but money first.
That's right. Money on the table.
I'm on a new show on CBS All Access called Why Women Kill with Lucy Liu. It's created by Mark Cherry, the guy at the Desperate Housewives, and that's coming out in August. I don't know if they're going to drop all the episodes, but that's when it comes out on CBS All Access. I have a podcast myself coming out, you know, because I'm on the cutting edge.
Yeah, 2019.
Pretty
much. All right, it's going to be 2019.
It's coming out July 23rd of this month. It's called 30 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. You can get it wherever you get your podcast. I'm pretty proud of it. I hope it finds a life, and I thank you for having me on to help me
plug
that stuff.
Yeah, of course, dude. Great. I appreciate you guys reaching out. I was stoked.
Yeah, it was fun.
I always ask everybody to send something ahead of time, and of course you did, and you have some really interesting stuff on there. But before we get into our traumas and whatnot, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're from, your upbringing, your background, get to know you.
I was born in Queens, raised on Long Island by loving parents.
So your parents were together?
They were together, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were, I was... my father was a plumber. My grandfather was a plumber. My uncle was a plumber. My father, they were all plumbers. So I was living above the plumbing store when I was a baby. And the neighborhood was changing in Queens. It was Jamaica, Queens. And my father said, pack it up. This place is... We're getting out of here.
Goddamn steel drums everywhere, motherfucker.
We gotta go. We're getting out of here. It's just Jamaica, Queens. And it's turning... You know, I don't know. But we're packing up the stuff. So we left. We went out to Long Island. And I was raised on Long Island, but I still...
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I got two brothers. They're both chefs on Long Island. And I came from pretty working class, you know, blue collar. So, but I never really fit in, you know? It's like, my family, they loved me. I was loved. I was cared for, but they didn't know what to make.
You're the baby, you said?
I'm the oldest.
Oh, you're the oldest.
I'm the first one, yeah. So, you know, they loved me. They even said, like, look, we love you, but fuck.
Yeah. What the fuck happened
What's with the books? You know, so it's like... But the support I got from my family was incredible. But the fact that I didn't fit in really messed with me because I was trying to fit in.
You're talking about within your own family.
My own family.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there was always that hidden kind of... See, my dad was my hero and still is to this day. But there's a healthy hero and there's an abdication of power to the hero that I had to get through. And that really started when he passed away. But the fact that I couldn't be like everybody else in the family was odd. And then you go to school and you get bullied and you're like, well, there's no peace here either.
At what age do you realize, does it hit you like plumbing's in the family, and I'm different from this group.
Oh, when I was trying to do something.
How old would you say?
I'm going to say.
Like elementary school?
Yeah. I'm going to say 12, 13 at puberty, kind of, okay. You know, in that years. But I was trying. My father's really good with his hands. He could fix anything and make anything. And I don't have, Ryan, I don't have that if-then go-to statement, you know, especially when it comes to cars. I love cars. I mean, I can gap a spark plug. I can change the oil.
Yeah, that's all I can do. I'm basic. Yeah, rotate tires, brakes,
that
oil,
I can do.
Tune up.
You know, I can slap a solenoid to get the starter to go. But now it's all a computer. I'm like, call the guy. Call, I can't reflash this hard drive.
It's so good to hear you say that because I know you're a car guy. Yeah, I feel like a bitch when I pop a hood now. I'm like, what the fuck
this is the first thing I took my hood. Someone stole a carburetor. There should be a carburetor here.
Right?
There's a plastic box with a carburetor. Honey, call the cops.
Nothing makes me feel like a bigger pussy these days than popping the hood being like, I don't know. I have no idea.
There could be a man under there letting you don't know. That
is the truth.
I got an old Buick. I have an old 70 deuce and a quarter because I know where
that
everything
one, yeah,
is.
You can work on
I
that.
Know where everything is.
Right.
The Mercedes I got to drive with the wife, something goes wrong. What happened?
God wants it.
God wants it.
God needs a car.
I can't check the transmission fluid. The guy said, there's 21 computers on this car. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You
the battery for
purpose.
My Mercedes is behind the back seat. I couldn't fucking find it. Forget jumping the car. I don't know where it is.
Is that really
you
what
need
it
a jump?
Behind the
I
back
think.
Seat. I think so.
I think I do. I'll jump you. I go, we got to solve one problem first.
Yeah, for real. That makes me feel so good. I had a car that I just did. I did all the maintenance on it. I would say all the time, it was a 1990 Honda Civic with original rims.
Mm-hmm.
And I did all the basic maintenance on
that
thing.
You're so white. Original rims?
Yeah, I kept the original rims on that, bro. Well, they were scratched up from the junkyard, but I kept them. But it was all oil changes, tune-ups, plugs, brakes, rotate the tires. And then I feel like the car right after that, I did hold on to that for a long time. The car after that, I was like, I can't work on this fucking car.
No, I can't. I never really could.
But see, also, the age of our fathers of being men and working with their hands and knowing how to do things or learning how to do things is dying
having
quickly.
Having patience to do.
Yeah.
Well, that was when I realized that I wasn't, see, figure you're 12, you're 13 years old. And I was trying to work on the car. My dad, like I said, could fix anything. So I'm sitting there and I'm trying. Ryan, I'm focused. I'm trying. And there's oil spilling. There's blood spurting. Wrenches falling. It's not going well. My father's in the doorway smoking a Lucky. And I can feel him. You know, and I'm trying. I know he's watching me and I'm nervous because I want to do well. Took a long drag off his cigarette. He came over. He put his hand on my shoulder and said, son, you're going to have to get a job. And you're going to have to work at something for the rest of your life. This ain't it.
This is not it, bro.
This is not it.
And
you're crushed because you can't be like your dad.
Yeah. My brother was out there working on a car one time, and he wanted to do the oil. My dad's like, go ahead. It was an older station wagon, Dodge Aspen station wagon, this old Mopar beast.
Let it die.
And he fills it up. And my dad's like, you put, what, 4 quarts in there? He's like, yeah. He's like, show me where you did it. Yeah, he put it down the dipstick.
Yeah.
He's like, you just fucked this whole
car. Yeah, all right.
You just fucked this whole car.
Yeah, that's great. You mean it doesn't run on Mop and Glow? We can't put dish detergent?
4 quarts down the motherfucker. You knew it right away. You're like, yeah. Oh, shit.
But yeah, so that not being able to be like my dad at a young age was devastating. So you don't fit at home, and then you go to school, and if you get bullied, which I was, you don't fit there.
What were they bullying you for? What were they going after you?
It was basically just the older kids on the bus, because in my, you know, there's older kids. You know,
that's it.
It's your turn in the barrel. You don't really know what you did. You just know, the pack's turning on me. And I think that's where I got. That's where humor became a defense mechanism. So I couldn't physically beat him, but I could outthink him, and I could take the energy that was coming. I wasn't aware I was doing this. You know, we're not aware of
no.
it. We just know we can do it. And it was, okay, I can do this. You can hit me all you want. You know, this bruise is going to heal. You're still going to be dumb.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're just going to be a dumb, heartless motherfucker tomorrow. You know, I'll just, this will go away. So I could defend myself verbally. And that's where I kind of found a little bit of peace. But, you know, the other side of that, you got yourself in trouble because you would
talk. All the time.
All the time. I was in trouble a lot. So I was, you never really felt settled. And there was.
Now, speaking of settled, I don't mean to interrupt, but did you stay in Long Island and grow up like there?
Oh, yeah.
Or did you bounce around?
No. Yeah, that was it.
So once you moved there, you were there.
Yeah, Italians don't move.
No.
They put a kitchen in the basement. They paint it red and green.
Yeah.
Mom cooks down there because she doesn't want to get the garlic smell on the good drapes. You know,
I love it.
Yeah, they don't move. Italians don't want to go anywhere. Columbus had to go to Spain to get the boats.
Yeah,
he's like, there's a new world. Where are you going? Sit down, have some wine.
Stop, son.
What are you
sit
doing?
Out there. Shut the fuck up.
Cheese. Where are we going? So we were all there. I went to college. I was the first one in my family that went to college. You know, they all went to work. Or jail.
You know? Really?
Well, I went to work. It was no one really went to college. I thought I was going in the army when I got out of high school, because that's what my dad did. You know, he got out of high school, went into the army. My mother had an engagement ring and a school ring on her finger. She did.
That's great.
Yeah.
Stacked them up like
John Glenn High School. Was the school ring and an engagement
ring.
The
yarn underneath it.
Yeah. Doesn't fit. Little scotch tape clean this right up. But I figured I was following that path.
Oh, that is probably
my dad
truth.
Went into the army. I said, okay, that's what you do. You get married, kid. And he goes, nah, you're going to college. I went, why? He said, because you can.
Yeah.
He said, you know, it's my father was, he was no joke, man. My father told me, look, my job is to give you a better life than the one I had.
Which was what? What was his upbringing?
He was my grandfather was a plumber, but he had no support.
Was it all at that same shop originally?
Yeah, it was my grandfather's place. My Uncle Louis was there too, and then my father was there too. My father wanted to do different stuff, but he was very mechanical. He was very my grandfather was into sci-fi. I never really knew about this. They were tinkerers. They were inventors. They had that mind. My grandfather knew when TV came out because he saw it happen. He's like, you can record that. He goes, you can record. He knew about video recording. He knew the possibility of that happening. But my father had no support growing up. You know, when he told my grandfather, this is a famous story in my family. He told my grandfather I was going to marry my mother. My father went to his father. He goes, I'm going to marry Louise. And my grandfather said, that's good. Let us know. We'll come.
Yeah, we might be there.
No help. No, we'll
right,
pay
yeah,
nothing.
We'll show up.
Nothing. So,
my mother's going to bring meatballs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll be there. You know, so there was no support. My father's famous by saying, I look behind me for support. There's nobody there. It's all me. So all that fear and all that energy got put onto me. So, you know, I'm a little twitchy. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah, I've seen it.
So you get that little, you know, and so that triggered control issues. So I have my controllers where I want to take care of everybody. And I'm codependent and I'm Catholic. That's
God,
the trifecta
are,
of fucked.
We are like fucking twins from another universe.
Shit,
bro.
I'm gold, silver, and bronze medals of fucked. That's us.
That's us.
Yeah. So I have all that stuff. So trying to find a place to land and be comfortable was totally aberrant to me because there was no place because the energy I was around wasn't there. My father was always, you know, the glass was half empty, the shit floating in the water, and it's your fault.
That's the saying.
Yeah.
So where do you go? Where'd you go to college?
I went to Marist College in Poughkeepsie.
And where is that? A four-year?
Four-year school. I was there the first year. I was in a band, and I had friends I thought would last forever, and then I sobered up.
Were you drinking big time?
Yeah, I was looking around, and I was like, well, that guy owes me money. That guy just wrecked his car. This guy, you know, I'm like, I got to get out of here.
And what did you major in there?
I got out with a degree. I got out doing the ballerina. My grade point average was a 2-2, baby.
Was it really? I've never heard that before.
Yep. A 2-2.
Well, you got out there.
I got out. I did it in 4 years. My mother was crying at my graduation. I'm so proud of you. My father's shaking his hand going, you bullshitted your way through this, didn't you?
Yep.
I said, hey, walks as good as a hit. I'm on base.
That's right.
I got a degree in finance. Can't balance my fucking checkbook.
Yeah, I
I came home to work every weekend because it was a 2-hour drive from my house. So the first year, I had a great time. Oh, I love these guys. And then you sober up and you look around and you're like, mm. So I would go to school. I got my schedule where I went from Monday to Thursday. I would drive home on Friday and I got a job at a fence company. And I was digging holes and driving trucks and forklifts because I always worked.
Yeah.
So I had money in my pocket. And I got in my car and I drove back up to school and dicked around for 4 days and figured out how I can get through this in 4 years. And that was it.
That was it.
Then I got out and I went, ran right onto a stage.
You did. Where was your first time?
Eastside Comedy Club, Long Island. July 13th, 1988, Wednesday night, open mic night.
Yeah.
It's a Pomodoro restaurant now.
Is it? The place I did in Baltimore is a restaurant now, and I just stopped back in when I did a show there last year, and they didn't even know.
Nah.
They didn't even know. Like, nah, it wasn't. I was like, trust me, it was this fucking place right here.
Yeah.
It's here. It's this place here.
Those things are important to us.
Right.
You know,
these people are like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Do you want something or not? I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah. Comedy club, all right. You pick a protein, pick your bowl. What toppings do you want?
You can tell me quinoa or seaweed.
Yeah, tell me a joke on the way out.
When you tell your dad that you're going to do comedy or that you want to do comedy, does he say? Is he supportive? Does he talk to you about leaning on the degree you just got, or what does he say?
Best thing I ever heard in my life. He came to see me. I made the mistake of telling my mother that I was going to do it, and my mother is the original Twitter. She tells everybody. Everybody. It goes through all the neighborhood. And they all come out in the neighborhood. Because everyone knew I was funny. And I didn't know about... Here's the other thing about being bullied and being in schools. I was never aware of my value. You know, I never aware... We're just being us. But apparently what we do is, you know, is valuable.
I get emails and thank you messages on this show.
Yeah, by the way, like, thank you.
You don't know what you're doing. You have no, I'm not in a bad way. I mean, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. But you have no idea how you're helping.
How you're helping.
What I'm saying.
That's the shit. That's the shit that I get. I'm like, oh, fuck. You know, wow. And then I flip out. I go, well, it's a responsibility.
No.
Just be the best you can in that moment.
That's
and the rest of the shit's going to happen.
Be the best you wherever you are.
But knowing that, you know.
Yeah.
You know. Here's the thing. I think we come to that conclusion at this point in our lives, but we're too fucking tired to do anything about it.
Yeah, I'm tired.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm
tired. Like, listen, I'm so glad I can help, but I'm not bending. The knees are gone.
I have a kid.
I'll help from here. But I can't move anything for you. It's like when the earthquake hit the other day. I was in front of the sink. I'm like, great. Now I got fucking balance issues. I got to deal with this shit now.
Do you want to feel?
And then
old?
I looked up and I saw the chandelier. Go, oh, thank God, it's just an earthquake.
Oh, just an earthquake. Just a 7-1.
Thank God.
I grabbed my daughter and I went old school and I said, just hang on, let's just stand here for a second. But I got her in door frame.
Yeah.
And it's going.
Yeah, goes, the 7-1. Shit, yeah.
She's like, my teacher said we should get under a table, and I was like. Yeah, they've updated some earthquake shit since I remember a massive one.
Yeah,
but it never seemed to get worse. It stayed steady.
But it was a roller. It was a long roller.
It was a long.
I was like this. I was sitting there, all right, and I looked over at my wife, and she didn't feel it yet. I'm like, all right, maybe she won't get activated. Maybe this will be.
Maybe this will
end before it activates the wife. And all of a sudden, I went, uh-oh, red alert. She's up.
Dude.
Right? So we went out the doorway, and she goes, then she sat to me, and she looks to me, because, you know, I'm the man. Apparently, we're supposed to know shit.
We're supposed
Ryan.
To know everything.
So she goes like this. She goes, what's our plan in an earthquake? I said, take my hand. This is our plan. Yeah. She's like, where's the safest play to be in the house? I go, out of it. Let's get out.
Out of the fucking house.
And then she's
house.
Like, but now she's on, you know, next door. The busybody.com, which is pretty much
your mom's original Twitter.
Yeah, yeah, it's my mom hanging out the window with a beanbag ashtray and a cigarette spying on.
He's telling jokes in Long Island tonight.
Yeah. Claire's husband's cheating on her. My son's going to be at this open Michael thing.
That is for real, dude. Yeah. That is for real.
So, but she's on the next door, the busybody.com, and they're like, and so all the bullshit comes in from the neighbors. Did you do this? Did you do that? We have to keep a tub full of water at all times. Great. We'll get mosquitoes and we'll die of malaria. Yeah. I mean, what do you do? We can't keep a tub of water the whole time. So it's just, and the other thing you realize when it hits, I'm like, I realize, shit, I'm so lazy. I ate the earthquake food last month.
I did. You ate your stash.
I ate my stash because I didn't want to go to the fucking store.
I haven't done that.
Yeah.
But you're right. The one thing about being a guy that you're supposed to, you would think you're supposed to be, is brave. And that's the one I don't want to always be. I'm like, we don't need to do this. Let's go. No, guys, too high up here.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
another thing. I've been saying it. As I'm getting older and all the shit I'm going through and dealing with the trauma and learning how, like we said, you're caught up in it and these different ways that you don't even realize because you're just being you and trying to be the best you moving forward. But I start to see myself like heights.
You don't like the heights?
I like being in a plane is cartoonish to me. That doesn't bother
me.
But something that's like, we were going
Space
up.
Space Needle?
Yeah, that would freak me out. I've been up there. That freaks me out. But again, it's got the rails, so I'm all right with that. But I was on an escalator going up in the Ocean Casino in Atlantic City, and it's like four of them. When I got up to that fourth one, I looked over and I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Dude, I sat down. I sat down on the fucking, I swear to God, I've never done that in my life. I was like, fuck this shit right
here. You sat down?
People were looking at me.
Because
I was like,
of emotion.
I'll be up there.
It was an escalator. It's not like you climbed the stairs. You're like, whew.
No, but it's the glass on the sides. And I mean, honestly, you could have just hopped right over and just killed yourself. Wow. It felt like it was 400 fucking feet up. And I was like, there should be a river down there right
really?
Now. Like, that's how high up that's we were.
I don't think you're high enough to die. You can look over and in your eye line is an orange Julius. I think you're okay.
That was level five, though, bro.
Level five orange Julius.
I sat down on the fucking, that's the first and only time in my life. I sat down at the escalator. I'm like, I got to go talk to
What did the little guy in your head do? We got a level five orange Julius.
Oh, hell no.
That guy in my head was like, sit the fuck down. Yeah. Sit down and don't look at
it. You know what I got? Knives. Like if my wife does the dishes and there's a knife sitting out, like not a regular butter knife or a little steak knife, but the knives used to cut stuff. Yeah. I'm like,
That one gets you?
That gets me because I always picture my wife, she's clumsy.
So are you not a blood fan either?
Of my own.
Yeah.
I like it kept inside. I'm a fan when I don't see it. When it comes out, I'm like, not so
I
much.
Just like, you just like knowing it's in there.
Yeah, I like knowing it's here. And sometimes when I'm real quiet, I can hear it doing its job, but I want to keep it inside. But like I always picture my wife reaching in the sink to get something, cutting herself with it. That's just the projection of doom. And that's what you had, the projection of doom.
Yeah, doom, for real.
And that's, I grew up that way.
Is that the term? Is that what it's called?
That's what I call it.
Yeah, well, that's a great term.
The projection of doom?
Yeah,
when you grow up like I did, it's like, well, why is this? Because I had to make sense of it. And like I said, Ryan, I had the love and support. My dad, when I told you, my mom, the whole neighborhood, my dad came. And we used to walk down to his office, and I saw him. He looked at me the next day after he saw me do stand-up, because I killed.
And how old were you?
July 13th, 88, was I 20? 21.
Okay.
I killed, and I didn't even realize what I did. You know, I just did it. And my father looked at me like a look I never had before. He's never looked at me like that. And I said, Pop, I think I want to do this. And again, long drag of the lucky. Do it now. He said, do it now before your life gets complicated. But if you're going to do this, you give it everything you got.
That's great advice.
Because one day there's going to be an old man in a mirror looking back at you. Worst thought you can ever think is if I tried that much harder. Because my father never did what he wanted to do.
I see. And what was it? Do you know what he wanted to do?
He wanted to be an inventor. He had that tinkering gene. He made everything. He made our toys. He built our house. He cut the driveway. We had a corner house. He cut the circular driveway. I came home one day and there was a little bulldozer, right? I'm like, what? It's like Fred Flintstone, a fucking dinosaur. And I'm like, Pop, what are you doing? So I'm going to cut a driveway. He goes, how'd you learn how to do that? I go, I'll figure it out. He started up a fucking bulldozer. He graded it. He cut it. He did it. There was no fear of I can't, what if.
Right.
He rented a fucking bulldozer and cut the driveway because he wanted a circular driveway. You know why? He fought my mother for years with building a circular driveway when we build the house. Why, Joe? Because I don't want to back up.
That was it. Not because somebody will block him
in. I don't like to back up.
Why is there a bulldozer here?
Pop don't like to back up.
It was a distillation of a simple need that my father had, that gift to encapsulate that. And I don't have it this, you know, I can't, but I can do it with words and I can do it with feelings and I can do it with a joke. It's like, I can't fix my life, right? But I can fix a joke. That's why I'm a confessional comic. I'm a student of the human condition. I'm not a sociological. I'm not a critic of society. I talk about what's going on in here. Because if I don't talk about it, who will?
Yeah, right. You know? Who the fuck will?
Yeah, fuck. I got to find some peace. I've suffered for my art, and now it's your turn.
Exactly.
But yeah, so I got that love and support. I always got the love and support from my family. I never got the, what are you doing? You're crazy. Their fear was projected on me about, sure, you have to be okay. My mother would say, I'm cold, put on a coat. You know, that was
right.
That was the fear that was always projected on you. And so it's ingrained in me. And a lot of it is projecting future doom because they're like in the mental guard tower all the time. They can't really relax. And you can't be in the present moment like that. And your life just slips away if you don't make an attempt to at least do that. At least for me, it does.
And now we're going to take a quick break to hear from our first sponsor, Hims. And I'm talking to you guys out there, all right? I know a lot of you are sexually active and sexual performance issues are more common than you think. Over 25% of new ED cases are guys under 40. Guys, I'm talking to you, all right? 40% of men by age 40 are struggle from not being able to get and maintain an erection, all right? The solution is Hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, all for men. There's no waiting room, so there's no awkward in-person doctor visit. There's no line. You can save a lot of time just by going to forhims.com. All right, being your best means performing your best. Try Hims for a month today. It's $5. All right, that's the deal we got for you. We'll get you started for just $5 while supplies last. That's a cup of coffee. See the website for details and safety information. That is important. This would normally cost you hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. But go to forhims.com/honeydew. That's forhims. That's forhims.com/honeydew. Forhims.com/honeydew. Our next sponsor is Upstart. And as most of you have found out the hard way, myself included, getting into debt is easy and getting out is hard, especially if your FICO score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. If I would have had Upstart, I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't have been 40 grand in debt, living off credit cards through college and the early parts of life. I wish I had something like this back then. It would have been much faster getting my credit back to a reasonable score and getting out of debt quicker and cheaper. Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you and they understand that. They make it fast, they make it simple, they make it easy to check your rate in just a few minutes without affecting your credit score. The best part, once the loan is approved, most people get their funds the very next business day. That's the next day. Over 200,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, fund their wedding, or to make a large purchase. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/honeydew to find out how low your Upstart rate is, all right? Check your rate only takes a few minutes, and it will not affect your credit. That's upstart.com/honeydew. Our next sponsor is Stitch Fix, all right? So if you would describe your look in one word, whether it's casual, sophisticated, playful, sporty, well, however you dress, Stitch Fix has the expert personal stylist that can help you look your best. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that delivers your favorite clothing brands right to your door. I use Stitch Fix. I went in, they set me up. I said, hey, go in and really use the account. So I did. You can get, I mean, whether you want it casual, dress, whatever, there's all your favorite brands are in there. North Face, Under Armour, Nike, they're all in there. You can tell them, fill out the form, tell them how you dress or what you want, and then they'll get you started. And you go to stitchfix.com/honeydew, answer some questions about your preferred style, and your personal shopper will ship you a box of clothes, shoes, and accessories. There's no commitment required at all, and you only pay for what you keep. Shipping, exchanges, and returns are always free. Plus, the $20 styling fee is automatically applied towards anything you keep from your box. You'll never have to think about looking good again with Stitch Fix. Get started today at stitchfix.com/honeydew and get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. That's stitchfix.com/honeydew. stitchfix.com/honeydew. Now let's get back to the show.
So earlier you mentioned your dad passed away.
Yeah.
So you obviously had a great relationship with your father.
Yeah.
And he passed away. How old was he when he passed away?
69 years old.
60. That was my grandma when she passed away. 69. That's young. You don't think it is, but that is young.
Yeah.
That's too young to die. I always say that. People are like, I'm like, is that, would you want to die at 69? Fuck no, I don't want to die at 69.
I want to die owing the government as much money as I possibly can.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And go out old too.
Fuck. Like, yeah, old. Over, crank. I told my wife, don't tell him I'm dead. I want him to come looking for me.
I want an FBI file.
Oh, yeah. I want a Ferrara Adam. He's upstairs. I told my wife, you put my body under a spotlight and keep rigor mortis in this finger. That's what I...
That's it.
Chase me.
Here put it that is. In your living will,
just
for real.
Dead.
So what happened? Are you comfortable talking about what happened with your dad?
Yeah, he got bladder cancer.
He did?
Cigarettes.
It was from the Luckies.
It was the Luckies, yeah. And I remember when I was a kid, I was like, Dad, at least smoke something with a filter. Like, nah, the filter's bad for you.
The filter's
bad for
you. Did he ever stop? Was he all smoking
he stopped at 40 years old because I remember the day, too. We used to vacation at Lake George, New York, right? Josh, you know, you're from Buffalo. Right?
You know Lake George?
You know Lake George, Josh. Yeah, so we went there. It's a freshwater. We were camping. You ever see Italians camp? All right. My mother's hanging salami in the trees. My uncles came. This was the big vacation. Everyone would come up from Long Island.
Right.
Oh, look, water, freaking boat. You know, my father had a boat. We got it from Spain, but my father had a boat. and that was his big toy.
What kind of boat?
Camp. It was a 25-foot Sea Ray Cuddy cabin. Which he made. This is how Italian.
He made what?
He made the kitchen. He made a little kitchen
on it.
Yeah. Here's the driver's seats here.
Yeah.
And he fitted under the driver's seat sat here. It comes up. There's a sink here. There's a place for a fridge and a cabinet. And the whole thing comes up out of the boat, goes onto the island. He got a pump, and
come
we had
on.
Running. We had running water.
Holy shit!
Because that's what he did. He was a plumber. He's a designer. Yeah. He had that. He would do kitchens and bathrooms, and he would build all this shit.
Why can't we shit on the boat, Dad?
Yeah.
You're a plumber, for Christ's sake.
No, we could. We had a toilet in the boat.
You did?
We couldn't use it because he's not pumping it out.
Yeah.
He goes, go shit in a hole.
You just shit in there?
There was an outhouse. Oh. So you go to the outhouse and you shit in a hole.
So he quits at 40.
He quits at 40 because he got winded unloading the boat. And he said, I can't, like, it's killing me. Now, I have the physical effects of I can't do what I used to do. So he quit. Cold turkey.
He did.
Yeah.
Luckies, too. God.
Just an animal. Just like, my father looked at fear and went, I thought I told you to wait in the truck.
He should make that shirt, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I saw it. I saw it happen. His command of his space was amazing. I talk about getting bullied. And I was ashamed to tell my father because, you know, he's this big imposing figure.
You think he would tell you to be a man and fight?
Yeah, I didn't want to come home and admit that I was afraid and didn't know how to handle it. Because to me, that's shame. And I didn't want to do it. So you hide your bruise and you keep going. So one day, the kid was bigger, meaner kid. And I realized there's no one coming to save my ass. So I grabbed a garbage can, and I came up, and I caught him right under the chin.
Damn.
Yeah, poof, and he went back. And the next thing I know, we're in the principal's office. He's got ice under his chin. He's crying. And they called my dad. And I'm like, I'm terrified. And they're looking out the window. There's a sign in the chain link fence. There's no parking, teachers only. My father parked a truck right in front of the sign. He never came into the office. He opened up he filled up the doorway and he gave me the look. You know, my father, he had a look. Not only did you know you were in trouble, but all the plants would die.
Should just drop yeah, it.
When
down.
He summoned that energy, he gave me that look at the beach once, and the tide went out.
The tide we'll was be like, back at 6:30. Yeah,
fuck that. So he leans into me with the look, and the teacher said, "You know, your son, these kids are fighting. Your son picked up a garbage can, hit him on the chin, and he's bleeding." And my father looked at the kid, he looked at the principal, and he said, "Well, if I was you two guys, I'd stay the hell out of his way." And he walked down the hall.
The hall? Where the fuck
did he go? He said,
"That was he didn't take me with him."
The principal didn't know what to do. Ryan, he's sitting
I wouldn't know what to do.
He's like, sitting there with a what the fuck look on his face. And he's like, "This isn't over, Mr. Ferrara." And down the hall, we heard, "Yeah, that's it."
Yeah.
I got suspended. I came home with the letter. Your son's, I'm at dinner. Pop, I got suspended. He didn't look up from the plate. He went, "You go to school tomorrow."
Really?
Yeah.
And did you?
Got a problem. You tell him to call me. Went to school. Principal saw me. "What are you doing here?" I'm like, "Look, I'm just as shocked as you."
I don't know. My dad's tripping. Yeah, I was hoping to watch Price is Right all day.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Yeah, I had a day planned. But I'm here. He said, "You should call him." And he walked away, and I never heard. That was it. That's the kind of, that's a fucking man, you know?
Yeah, that's a man.
And so not being able to live up to that or the idea of what that should be.
For him, we're talking about.
For him or for what I wanted to be like him.
Okay.
Like, when I started doing comedy and I started working, I stepped into the access of my power. It's like, and that there was a settled feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I was on stage, I go, "I don't know how long this is going to last, but for now I belong here." You know when you hit a golf ball right and your balls go ping?
Yeah. You're like, "God damn."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I could access, I had access to power that way. And then that lasted a while. And then when I started acting, then this big fucking door opened. And then when my dad died.
Were you?
He got died. I was on a movie set. I was doing a movie with handsome guy. Deadpool. Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a handsome. I don't
that's
care.
A handsome
I don't care
man.
Where your mail is delivered. That's a handsome.
That's
guy.
That's a handsome man.
Yeah. So I remember I got the call. Pop's got a tumor. My brother Johnny called, and I was in my trailer, and my face went fucking white. And it was second or third day of shooting, so you don't really know anybody,
right? Yeah.
And I walked out of my trailer, and there was a guy in the movie called an actor, Derek Luke. You know Derek Luke?
Mm-mm.
Kindest human being I've ever ran into. He looked at me. I met this guy the other day at the table read to say hello and shake his hand. That's it. I walked out of my trail, blood drained from the face. He looked at me and goes, "Man, you all right?" And I said, "Yeah, no, I'm fine." Okay. And we're walking to the set, and I'm trembling, you know, because I don't process it. I got to fucking work. And he's like, "Oh, shit, I need a minute. Can you come help me with something?" And I'm "Yeah, yeah." And I'm like, and he tells the stage man who's walking to the set, "We'll be right back." Takes me to his trail. I go, "What do you need?" He goes, "You're not all right." He goes, and he took the heat because we're going to be late for the set. He goes, "What happens?" "They just called. My dad has got a tumor, and I don't know what to do." Took my hands, dropped to his knees, and just started praying out loud, praying with me. Now, I'm not a religious guy, but boom.
Yeah.
Just took over the situation, do what he knew had to do.
Help. That's how he knew how to help.
And just the immediacy of his action and the kindness and the openness of his heart, just, I never forgot that.
That's awesome.
And that was just, I was like, fuck. That's so, when things get dark, I hang on to moments like that.
Yeah.
And my dad telling me, "Do it now." And there's a support system. And I didn't even know this guy. And I ran into him once after the movie was over.
That's it.
And I just said hello to him. We were some press thing. And it was this. Never forgot it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did you finish the movie and get to go back in time to be with your dad?
That was the beginning of the... That was the beginning of him dying. You get about 3 years.
Okay, 3 years.
When I talk to people about...
Some people don't. I just had a friend that was. Yeah. They thought he had 6 months to a year, yeah. And he was gone in 2 months.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah. You see, we get about three years when people I was talking to. And it was rough because he did the chemo. He did the whole thing. But I wrote, and when you're saying how we help, I wrote a bit about my dad going to chemo. It's on one of my specials, but it's on YouTube. It's called The Chemo Bit. And I got so many emails and stuff about the bit. And I got a call from, it got licensed by Professor Eddie Freifeld at Yale Drama and NYU. He called up and said, I want to license that bit to use it as a teaching tool. Because the emotion goes down and comes up again. And I just wrote it for me to get it out. And he goes, how much? I'm like, free. Take it. Go. It's got a bigger life. You know, I'm like, wow. So I was that was very pleased that could
great.
Help somebody. Yeah.
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 So what was the final time like? I mean, did you get to go back often? Were you having a juggle
work? Oh, yeah.
Or did you just take off?
No, I was living there. I was still living in New York because I was shooting. We finished the movie. He got diagnosed. And I was shooting Rescue Me at the time. So I was living in New York. And my parents were on Long Island. So I would go out every weekend. Good. And I remember I got my rent-a-car bill was through the roof because I would just get a car and I'd just drive out the weekend. And I would spend every weekend, you know, with my dad and my mom. So I was there for the whole ride. And, you know, it's heartbreaking, you know. But the moments were so fucking, there was a lot of fucking funny moments.
Yeah.
He's in this little condo, right? They sold the house. He's in the condo. And he's in he's got this chair, the wheelchair, because he couldn't get around at the end. He's got an oxygen tank underneath it. The chemo's kicking the shit out of him. So he had this little room because he couldn't sleep laying down. So I bought him one of those electric chairs. So we figured out how to angle this thing and how to get this chair out. So I took the molding off the bottom of the wall because I had to make the turn. So I had to modify the house to get him out so he could make the turn. And I had to teach my mother how to do the turn because I wasn't going to be there all the time. So he's got the oxygen tank under his nose. He's in the chair. My mother's coming out making the turn. He's trying to stop him. My mother pulls the oxygen. His head goes back. And my father goes, Louise, I ain't a horse.
Just snap this goddamn.
Yeah. It's just like, I was waiting for her to do this. Come on, Joe. Yeah, yeah. With the fucking oxygen tank.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there was a lot of gallows humor. There was a lot of, this story, this fucking freaked me out. So he can't sleep a lot. And I sat up with him at night and I had to rub his kidneys. It was heartbreaking. So I finally get him back to bed. I double up the medicine and he finally, oh, that's good. Puts the chair back and there's a street light outside and the lights over his head with the street light. That's where the chair landed. And I'm just looking at it about 3 a.m. and I haven't slept in days. So there's that halcyon thing we both got going. He's doped up. I'm just exhausted.
Yeah.
And he's not, my father wasn't very a religious man, but he looked at me and said, hey, if the stories are true, I'll get to see my father again. I don't know if I'm going to see my grandfather, though. I think he killed a guy. And he fell asleep.
He left you on that?
This is what he leaves me with. I think he killed a guy.
That's a hell of a way to have to wake
out.
Up.
Yeah. I can't wake him up.
And you doubled the medicine, too.
And I'm like this. That. Now I'm up, Brian. I'm up. I walk into the kitchen. It's 3 a.m. My mother's there in a robe. She's making a cup of tea. And I went, Ma, Grandpa killed a guy? Adam, don't listen to your father. He never killed nobody. He was just a wheel man.
A wheel? He was part of the murder
what?
Of the driver.
He goes, yeah.
That's who I would be, by the way.
It was during the Depression. He goes, he did some work for Joe Bananas down at the dock. He was the guy that imported the bananas. Something went bad. He took the weight. He did a dime upstate, and that's how we got the bungalow in Port Chet.
Your mom's on point, dude.
This is what mother said. She goes, that's how we got the bungalow.
He did a dime.
She goes, listen, if you take somebody out, you get a bigger payday than that piece of shit house in Sound Beach. Go to bed. This is the shit that came out.
That's probably all true too. You definitely get a bigger payday than that.
Yeah. So, but that's the. I grew up in a crime family without the money, power, or influence. But,
yeah, yeah.
But it was that.
Yeah, yeah.
that's the in my head. That's right. Pretty much. You know, my emotional state growing up was remember the Goodfellas when Ray Liotta's doing the coke. I hear helicopters. Dude. There's helicopters.
One of my favorite movies. Yeah.
But that's the emotional state you grow up in.
Yeah.
Or I did anyway.
So what did you notice? What happened after your father passed? Mm-hmm. What were the traumas that were triggered and what started happening to you that you had to go deal with?
Well, first, it's the it brought back a lot. And again, this is all in hindsight, right? Mm-hmm. Because we don't know we're going through.
No, you have no idea. So you finally, something hits you and you go, I need to get this shit checked. And then you start realizing.
And then, but the initial thing was, all right, I got to take care of the family because I was, and a lot of friction. A lot of friction in the family because I was trying to take, handle everything. And I was here. I was in New York back and forth, but I was on the road.
Your brothers are chefs. Where are they in New York?
They're home. They're on Long Island. But I was on the road. So I wasn't really around. So I would check in with the family. And I didn't realize the state of everything. So I had to go in and take, I'm going to do this for my mother. I'm going to do this, blah, blah, blah. You do the whole thing. And we go to his wake, right? My mother's crying. She's picking out the coffin. I want this. I want this. Oh, he would have liked that. Most expensive shit you can pick out, right? Okay, Ma. We walk my brother Johnny. He's a big boy, my brother Johnny. So it's just me and him sitting there. He leans into the funeral director. He's like, I see this number here, but I need you to sharpen your pencil. See what you can do.
I love those old times.
This is...
He's trying to wheel a deal on a coffin, for Christ's sake.
The guy's face goes white. Sharpen my pencil. Yeah, see what you can do. And he goes, excuse me, I got to go to the bathroom. I go, you're leaning on a funeral director? The fuck are you doing?
The rest of the guy.
I go, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, what, Dan? What are you kidding me? You think these flowers, they've only been to one? Come on.
He's convinced.
Yeah.
Did the guy come off it?
I don't even know.
No, he probably tried to sell you another fucking coffin.
I just threw him the money. I didn't give a shit at that point. So... But yeah.
I need you to sharpen your pencil.
I need you to sharpen your pencil. And he said it in such a threatening tone. I went like this. I went, are you? What the fuck?
But do you know what I appreciate about that? You're in, most people, I would say, are at their worst at that moment. And they prey on you.
Oh,
they
yeah.
prey on you with these airtight coffins and all this bullshit.
Listen, I don't know if you know about the bugs.
Yeah,
what?
Exactly. And they're like, oh, yeah. But your brother leaning back is that guy wasn't used to that shit.
No.
Like, what the
fuck? No, everyone comes in crying. And
yeah. And you got him.
How
yeah.
much?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pay him, Fred.
We'll put it on the credit card.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So you take care of that. So the first mode I went into was just survival mode. Care for everybody. And then realizing I was trying to be like him and trying to control the situation because that was a big thing. My father would control everything. That was the role that he played in the family and everyone else played the role along with him. So there's a certain abdication of power. You need pop's permission to do this shit. It's not spoken. It's non-spoken communication. But even like when you said I want to be a comic, I got by him saying do it now and pushing me in a way that gave me permission to do it. Because he could have crushed it right there.
Right.
Because I wasn't aware that I needed that permission. And him dying was a long journey of me looking for that permission and realizing that, fuck, I got the permission. I don't need to fucking ask anymore. And then once you have that realization, not being angry. Empowerment isn't fuck you. And that was a big thing I had to learn.
Yeah.
Because usually in my neighborhood, it's fuck you.
Yeah.
Revenge.
Yeah. Fuck you. Vendetta.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Sure.
Yeah. I should drive a pickup truck to carry the grudge just to make it fucking easy. You kidding? So putting that shit down and knowing how to do it without fuck you, because it was all anger. Empowerment was anger in my family.
Yeah.
It was, and that was the guys on the street you saw, Freddie, you won't see him no more, walking straight.
Right.
Why do you limp?
Wow.
So that was a big thing, not yelling. And taking the tools that I had growing up and getting married. When I got married, I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. And then, one day my wife had a list.
As they do.
But I realized that this isn't working. She was crying one day. I was yelling. She's crying. I said, yeah, I'm not letting this asshole into my house anymore. So that was a big thing, too. I couldn't be a better man with the tools I had. Mm-hmm. So I had to look at what I was doing.
I had to figure out how
I want to be a better man, but the way I know to do it isn't working. So I got to let go of that.
Yeah.
So the first thing for me was figuring out where I want to go and what I want, and then looking at what's in my way that I'm creating. You know, and I was trying to be my dad. And when people didn't play the roles that they were supposed to play because I was playing that role, I got pissed off. And I'm like, you know. And the fact that I took on a lot of his fear when he said, there's nobody behind me. So especially in this business, you know.
Oh, dude.
We don't know if we're going to fucking work again. No. I'm starting a podcast. Who it could go to shit. We were talking off the air. It could all go to shit.
Everything could go to shit.
There's no, like, no. You know, there's no. So I had to get past the fact. It's a trust issue, too. My wife was like, you need to trust. I go, in this world, are you fucking crazy? You know?
It's funny. I had somebody, and this is the last 2 years, tell me, they're like, you're not jealous. And I said, no, I'm not jealous at all. And she goes, but you're suspicious. And I was like, I go, that's it.
Yeah.
40 fucking plus years.
Yeah.
And somebody just said it to me. And I go, that's it. Yeah. I'm never fucking jealous. I'm just always like, I don't know about
yeah.
that.
You want some coffee? Why? What's in it?
Yeah. Right. I'm always suspicious. Yeah. I'm suspicious of everything. I don't know. You want to get over here and get these free shirts? I'm like, I don't know about that shit.
Jesus said he was coming back. Yeah. He didn't say when.
That's right. I'm suspicious of that motherfucker.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it for me. I'm very suspicious all the time.
It's trust issues.
Yes. No, of course.
Huge. There's no trust. Yeah. Kindness is greeted with suspicion. That's right. I actually have that line somewhere some fucking thing. Because it is. It's a defense mechanism. You don't want to allow yourself to
believe it.
Do you feel you're entitled to it? Let me ask you that.
Entitled to what?
Good things. Entitled to.
It took me a long time.
Unbridled kindness.
Yes. Now I do.
Yeah.
I didn't before.
Yeah.
You know, I just always assumed everybody had, a plan B or ulterior motive or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I look at somebody.
Is it self worth for you? Because I thought, I don't do that.
Yeah. Growing up, when you're told you're worthless and, your whole life, even though you don't believe it, in your soul and you move forward, you still can't get, that filter's there. You got to get by that filter.
Well, were you told that don't deserve? See, I wasn't told.
Right.
But the behavior was, you can do anything you want. Not tonight, it's raining.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm cold, get a jacket.
Yeah, I'm cold, get a jacket. Yeah. You can do it. Yeah, listen,
love that.
Yeah,
this is how I feel. You need to feel that shit.
Yeah, that was my father. He goes, listen, you got to go out in this world. You got to trust people. You can't be a cynical bastard. That guy shakes your hand. You count your fingers. He's a fucking Hungarian.
For real. What? Yes, exactly. Right.
What?
Tell you that and then tell you, watch this motherfucker.
Yeah,
right
watch
here.
That motherfucker. Right. God loves everybody except fuck.
This guy right fucking here.
Yeah, so you don't know how to process that.
So go ahead.
No, you're the same thing. You know what else got me? A big one? Worry is not responsibility.
Ooh.
That was fucking huge for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought, my father was always worried.
Yeah.
He was always aggravated. He was always yelling to get shit done, to take care of the family. There was a veil of virtue on it. Oh, that's how a man is. That's how a man takes care of his family. He yells until shit gets done. He was always worried, too. I saw the fucking, the giant ashtray. Filled with the butts of Luckies.
Yeah. That's a good one, yeah.
That was big for me.
How are you dealing with it now?
I drink in the morning.
Oh, man.
I write about it.
You do? You journal?
Yeah, a lot of stuff. I write.
Do you put it all? Do you put a lot of this into your material? Are you able to yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the only thing. Like I said, I can't fix my life, but I can fix a joke. Like, I can get to what I want to get to by making that joke work. And a lot of times I'll start with an idea, and I'm at the point now where I can see where it's going to take me. I'm like, oh, that's what it wants to be.
Yeah.
And I think not lack of control, but letting back from the control and getting myself to let it breathe. A lot of things I got wrong growing up was this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of early part of my career was control. And I'm shifting now in my life. And that was one reason I wanted to start the podcast. I figured out what I wanted to say. I figured out what I wanted to do with it. Because, you know, this is great. I mean, you found this. And Segarra's is great. And Rogan's is good. I mean, I look at this. I'm like, oh, I can't, you know. And I just didn't want to be running around with a recorder in the back of a green room, you know, talking to other comics.
Right. Going,
you're fucked up too.
You know?
Yeah.
Because people do that. And they do it better than I could. So, but at this point in my life, I'm trying to shift from getting something to being something and letting go of that control. So I'm like, okay.
That's so hard.
That's hard, yeah, but that's kind of interesting.
I feel like a lot of that's what my anxiety now is letting go of that control.
Oh, yeah.
Because all my life, that wall has been what has protected me and helped me move forward. So then starting to let that down and let people in, I'm like,
yeah,
I'm going to sit down on this motherfucking escalator. I'm going to sit down on this motherfucking escalator. Yeah. I really believe that's part of all of it.
And the control is an illusion.
Yeah.
The fucking earthquake, 7.1.
Yeah, we're nothing. Ah. Yeah, we're nothing.
Yeah, oh,
we're
I'm
nothing.
That's
yeah,
it.
I'm in control of
nothing.
Yeah,
you're in control of shit.
That is the truth, yeah.
Yeah. You can, even if we write a joke, you don't even control that. They laugh. Don't you hate it when jokes go away? You have a fucking joke go away?
Yeah, like, I'll shelve it. That's on a shelf somewhere.
But it's like, shit, that you can't, what? I'm not doing anything different.
Yeah.
You know, they're like fruit.
You have any of those moments where something about your dad will just catch you? Like, for me, it's been, like I said, it's coming up on 30 years, and it doesn't matter. I'll be at the grocery store and the frozen fucking food and the song will come on. I'm like, God damn.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You know, it'll just get you.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, I wasn't expecting
Cats in the Cradle? You motherfucker.
I'm in the lead pocket section now. I'm just like,
oh, sir, are you okay? Yeah, I'm just
crying.
I'm lactose intolerant. I can't
crying
enjoy
over
dairy like everybody else. Yeah.
Oh,
Cats in the Cradle. That one will kill you. Then there was a Dan Fogelberg one.
A Carpenter's Son.
There's a fucking Dan Fogelberg song. I forget what it was. I punched the shit. It was recently, too. I punched the shit out of a headline of a rent-a-car. Just,
why?
Don't know. Don't
just
know.
Thinking about
something
shit.
Happened.
Yeah.
I think it was my...
Those
I think
triggers.
Somebody, I know. Somebody cut me off, and I yelled, and it was my father's voice coming out of my mouth. And I got... I think it turned into anger because it was just... It was pain. But I wasn't in a position, I was driving and I had to get to work. I wasn't in a position to allow myself to let the pain out through sadness. I just had to put the energy out through something.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll punch something.
Yeah, a rental car.
Because I'm a healthy man.
Yeah, well, it's a rental car though.
Yeah,
so, you
and know. I took the insurance.
Yeah, you get that
fuck
insurance, you fuck
Dad.
That.
I miss Daddy. Just crushed the fucking dome light.
Shatter in the windows.
Yeah, I caught the dome light. Yeah, it was bad. But yeah, you don't know you're going through it.
You have no idea. I mean, you know you're going through something, but you have no idea what it's doing until you can really get on the other side and look back and be like, all right, I'm still fucked up, but I got a window into this. Let's fucking climb back through. That's the thing. You got to want to climb back through that window and go back inside and refigure it all out again. That's what's tough. Most people don't want to do that.
Yeah, change is hard.
Change is hard, but it's necessary. But it's also hard to look in a mirror and be like, I'm fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the same advice I would give to my friend that went through this. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to give to yourself and listen, you know?
Yeah, well, it's hard. Like, I can help other people, but I look in a mirror and I go, I try to give myself the advice. And the guy in the mirror is like, you're so full of shit.
Yeah.
Because you don't believe it. It's like, your wife will tell you something. I don't hear it. Someone else will say, so I come home, same thing she was saying. Oh, now I get it. It's the delivery system of the message. But yeah, and I want to change because I figured out a long time ago, life is pretty much looking at me like, it's not me, it's you.
Yeah, that's
I've been,
the truth.
I've been here before you showed up.
I'll be here after
I'm
you're
after
gone.
You're gone.
Long after, yeah.
You can look, you can stay off the escalator, make everything you must need is going to be on the ground floor, or you can figure out how to go up to your Orange Julius.
Yeah, I'm going to get that Orange motherfucking Julius. That's promise you that.
But that's also what helped me was, again, looking at where I want to is the clarity of the intention. You know, if you're angry, you ask, why?
Right.
And what do I want to get? I want to be a better man. And I want to be a better man for my wife because I just don't. I mean, my wife's stunning. And I look at her and I'm like, how long am I going to get away with this shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I look at it when I get worried. I When I really get worried,
that's look at, suspicion, right?
My wife
there.
Is
How
my
long
wife
am I going to get away
is
with it?
Stunning, and I mean, just and a beautiful person. Just and she's a beam of light, Ryan. She's gorgeous, my wife. And I look at her, I'm like, God's not going to let her starve. I'll be all right. I'll just keep taking care of her.
Yeah.
So it's like the flowers. I can water it. I can give it sunlight. It's going to grow on its own. But I got to get that trust of. It's like I said, even this creative endeavor of starting my podcast, it's got to grow on its own.
Yeah, it
all
does.
I can do is just spend time in a garden.
So how what did that do with your relationship with your mom? Did you grow closer? Did you feel like you needed to be there more for her? How did that play out?
Yeah, that was because my mom was. I don't think she's really processed her grief as she's learned how to live with it. You know, because so much of her identity, and a lot of this is identity.
Yeah, you said it goes back to high school.
They were married longer than they weren't.
Right. Yeah.
You don't have that anymore.
Right.
You know, everything, that was it. And my father knew how to deal with her crazy, and my mother knew how to deal with his crazy. So now, it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to play the role of how I saw my father communicate with my mother. I tried, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't, you know, I can't, you know, and I have to realize she's in her isolation, and I can't make her process the grief. She's got to want to or not. She started knitting. Afghans. I have more Afghans than Kabul.
Did she date again?
No.
She just retired.
Are you kidding?
All.
She yeah, doesn't.
It was over.
Right now, she's like, I like the Outlander. I watched the Outlander. The guy has such a beautiful body. I'm like,
your mom.
I gotta hang up.
Yeah,
she's not dating. Are you kidding? There's three beats to every conversation with my mother. What she ate, who's dead, and what's wrong. That's it. There's no room for anything else.
Is she by herself?
Yeah.
She's how old is she now?
My mom is 73. Yeah. And she's in a gated community because apparently she has to be kept under guard. Well, she'll spread lasagna and guilt throughout the neighborhood. So she's in one of those 55. It's like my father said when he was dying. He was like, you know, I got her behind bars, so she'll be safe. I mean, that was it. I saw my father make our lives better and make my mother's life better and protect. It was all protection.
That, right.
That's where to provide and protect. That's where that was the mission statement to a point of neurosis.
Right, which then spiderwebs out into us and all the anxiety and responsibility and all of it. Yeah.
And it's all future, what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And you can't protect against it. I mean, like I said, the fucking earthquake the other day. I'm like, okay.
We're nothing. Yeah.
You're
a bug. A great point. Yeah, we're nothing. So do you get to take your mom on set? Do you get to take her to shows?
She doesn't. I bring the show to her now. There's a little club out in Long Island on the East End of Long Island that I go to when I try to play once a year and stuff so she can come out because there's no driving at night anymore. That's
that's a thing of the past. Yeah.
So, but she used to, when I started, they had a great time. I would bring them to everything I could, and they would show up. I played the Rescue Me Comedy Tour was something they would look forward to. We did that for a couple of years. And we did Radio City. And I said, Pop, I'm playing Radio City Musical. He goes, yeah, kid, your mom says you're playing the Mohegan Sun Casino. We're going to go to that.
That's closer.
Pop, I'm
we're
playing
not coming
radio
into the city.
I said, but you're going to come to the show. We're in the arena. The giant, I'll be there. Oh, we'll be, you know, unless I get on a rush. But I'll be there. But they wanted to gamble, but he came. I played Carnegie Hall.
God.
I think it was the Toyota Comedy Festival. It was me, Leary, and a bunch of other comics. And my parents came in to Carnegie Hall. And I got standing up. I just
hit
it right.
Fantastic.
It was Carnegie Hall. And I walked off stage and Leary came out because he was hosting it. And we were doing, I think we were doing Rescue Me or The Job. It was one of those shows. And Leary was like, he just went, standing ovation, Carnegie Hall. Your mom and dad are here. Aren't they? They're right out there. Your boy made it. And I put my hands up and the place erupted. The light came around.
Oh, wow.
It was surreal.
Yeah.
We go backstage. My mother comes, my mother's this big. And goes back and looks at Leary, and she goes like this, don't you ever do that again. I don't want the spotlight on me. If I wanted to be the spotlight, I would have been on stage. Was I on stage? No, I was in the audience because I didn't want to be seen. She's yelling, and Leary's like this, like his mother's like,
I'm sorry.
Like it's his mom. Man, yeah.
I felt guilty. I should have to kill him because I thought I was doing something. I'm sorry.
For
I'll
real.
Stop smoking. Is that okay?
Why yeah. would you think you're doing something wrong there? Yeah. yeah.
That was it. But yeah, so I would bring them to other stuff. I got nominated for remember the American Comedy Awards?
Yeah.
I got nominated a couple of times. So I'd fly them out for that. So I flew my parents out with my tuxedo and everything. And we're on the red carpet, and I'm doing an interview on the red carpet. So it's me, the lady interviewed me, and the publicist with my family and my girlfriend at the time. So I'm sitting there, and yeah, it's an honor to be nominated. What the hell I'm saying? My mother comes over, no clue that there's an interview coming, puts me on the show. Adam, we're going to go in because I have to pee. So we're going to go in. The publicist lady said she'll meet us, so we'll see you at the seat. No, come on, Joe! She leaves. My father walks in like this. Look at all these freaking people. Just walk right through the set.
And you're right on camera.
And they sat down.
Yeah.
They just, that was that part of their life. They weren't impressed with anything. There's a video on YouTube about my parents. I interviewed them before I died. And it's how I remember my parents. They're sitting there. My father was a big man. My mother was a little. And they're holding hands and yelling at each other. Well, I interviewed about Letterman. She's like, we go in to see Adam. I couldn't believe I was there. I couldn't believe I was in the show. And he wasn't on. Whatever happened. He got he got bumpered or something.
Bumpered.
So yeah. I'm like, what the frig happened? And Adam said they ran out of time. And I told him, I said, well, we're here. We'll wait. Let's do this. I'm not coming back.
I'm not coming back.
She didn't understand. And my father was sitting. He goes, I remember it was cold. And I thought, Letterman, like, you can't, you have people over here. This is your place and it's cold? Is this the way you treat people coming to your friggin' house?
They keep those studios cold as shit.
And he goes, you know what about Letterman? I never liked them. I never thought he was funny. And when he bumped my son, he really sucked.
Bumpered? I don't That's so great, dude.
Yeah. So they got to they got to see a lot, and I got to show them a lot, and I got my father had an office. He did kitchens and bathrooms. He was, well, again, plumbing, but he took it to another level. He just wasn't fixing shit. He was designing
that boat
shit.
Thing. I love it. You can built portable.
He bought a portable kitchen that came out because he saw awesome. On how to do that. So even when I write now, when I can't figure it out, because I figured out how to find out the direction to get through the anxiety, pal, because you got to find a way. So I actually got this from my dad, I think. I stole when he passed away, I took all his drawings, all his mechanical drawings, and I framed them because he would have like the working stuff
cool,
and then he
would
put like what it looked like. So it was like art to me. So I framed them, I put them on the wall. And when I need to figure something out, I get a big piece of drafting paper. I stole his pad. So that's the parchment.
Right. Yeah.
And I sit down with a pencil and I just put the ideas down. I try and connect them the way he would. And I got a T-square, and I do the whole thing. It's just the process of trying to put the thought together.
That's how you write your jokes?
That's how I figure out material. The structure of stuff. Then once I got the structure, I'm like, that's great. What that's about. And then it comes from that. It goes on to a legal pad. And then on a legal pad. The worst part is when it's got to go into the computer, because now it's work.
Right.
This is art to me.
Right, yes. Work. Yeah.
And then then I listen to it. Then it becomes an audio file, and then I'll just drive around and listen, because I process by listening.
Me too, yeah.
So that's... You know, I got that from my dad, and it's a warm feeling. You know what? He used to draw with a pencil. The scratching of a pencil, that sound is comforting to me.
Yeah.
That was my dad working. The sound of a dishwasher is comforting to me, because that was my mom. Was the dishes were on, the kitchen was clean. She's finished a little bit of wine, and now she's going to read me a story, or things are done. So it's weird when you said, "Do something trigger it." That's what triggers it for me.
And do you have kids? Do you want kids?
I don't want to lose my figure.
No.
No, I got the wife and I. We got a dog, and I look at her. You know, it was funny because I was home from the road, and we live by the beach, so the doors are open. Sunday morning, coffee's just kicking in. We're laying in bed, dog's sitting there. Like, and my wife is, like I said, she's beautiful. I'm looking over, going, she's still here. I got another day. And I look at her. She looks at me. It was like one of those moments where you don't say anything, but you know this is good. And she goes, you ever think about kids? I go, yeah, but this goes away. She's like, yeah, pass the coffee. So,
are you an uncle?
Yeah. I got two God kids, gorgeous. Sophia and Joseph, my brother Johnny's got two kids. And to watch them grow up and to watch my brother deal with, and to watch that, not that boundary, but that definition of who he is pretty good. Because all the shit we do as kids go, you have a kid. I see my brother going, this don't get, it's my kids. That line doesn't get crossed.
Right.
And there's a certain kind of, you know, I need to be free. I need to be this. You have to be kind of free in harness, if that makes sense. You got to know, like, here's the boundaries so I can fly all I want in here.
That's
but
right.
That don't happen and that don't happen.
That's it.
Which is, I need that.
Yeah.
That's the structure I was talking about.
Me too. Here's the box you're allowed to be creative in right here. Do whatever the fuck you want in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go do this. I'm not going to do it's like my marriage. I know guys that, you know, I can't with the guilt.
No. It would eat me up.
I couldn't. Why are you crazy?
I would tell on myself so fast.
I would come home from the road. How was the road? Sit down. Oh, God. What?
Yeah, I couldn't do it either.
It's just, she's so, you know, like I said, oh, okay. I have to change to make her life better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you got the same thing.
Yeah.
It's killing both of us.
It's killing me.
Yeah. And what's killing you about it? It's the worry?
Well, yeah, worry's a big part of it. For sure it is. And also just... It's like, man, I've been through all this shit. I'm in a good space, and now there's some new shit.
But there's always going to be new shit.
That's the thing. It's like, God damn, here comes the new shit.
How did you get through the old shit?
Well, the old shit, you know, death and all that stuff with humor.
Yeah.
But with a lot of rage, like you said, a lot of anger.
A lot of shit.
A lot of frustration. A lot of, you know, I hurt a lot of people. I got hurt a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole thing. You don't know. And hopefully you're ever evolving and you can start, you know, minimizing the mistakes and the repeats. The repeats are the ones I try to not keep, you know, I'm like, at least it's some new shit. You know what I mean? At least I'm not repeating some old shit. But a lot of that old shit can help you with the new shit.
Well, no, look at the shit you've done. It's like I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day. He's been angry at somebody for a long time. And he's like, you know what? I need to unburden myself. I said, okay. He goes, we're just bullshitting. And he's like, you know, I'll go and I'll apologize for this. And I go, and what's going to happen? He's like, well. He goes, but if I know I'll do it, he's going to do that again. And I'm like, because you're looking for him
to
unburden you.
That's right.
So if you want to unburden yourself, find out what you got to put down. Like I had to do. I apologized. I had a falling out with a buddy of mine over something that was important at the time, but in the grand scheme of things, nothing really is. So I called him up, and I didn't go back to the incident. I said, look, I'm sorry I let so much time go by before I made this call. Because that's what I was sorry about. Whether I was right or wrong in that situation, don't know. But I was sorry I let that go. So it wasn't a big dissertation about, well, you did this and you said this and I did, and how could you and why did you and all that shit. We never got into that shit. That's already in the past. The residue of that and the echo of that was, that's what I'm upset about, that I didn't face it then.
Yeah.
And that's what I needed to unburden. So it wasn't up to him to give me the outcome I was seeking. It was up to me to say it to him. And just by the act of doing that, a lot of shit went away.
That was with my mother, the same thing. Once I finally let her in, not just for me, but for my daughter, a lot of shit went away. Yeah. But then a lot of new shit came up because now you're living a different way. Mm-hmm. But I just got that call from a friend of mine, actually. It was 13 years ago. We stopped talking.
Mm-hmm.
And he just called maybe a month or so ago and was like, I'm so sorry I've let all this time pass.
Yeah.
I've wanted to do this. I didn't have the courage to do it at the time, but fuck it. And I was like, it's great to hear from you.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't go back to any of that. I don't care about that.
It's great. You don't want to go around.
No.
You don't want shit in your heart.
No. Too old for that shit.
I don't. Yeah. You got.
I mean, it's easy in your 20s to be throwing knees up and just walking around, and you know. But in your 40s, you can't still be fist fighting in your 40s. Hey,
what are you doing?
You know what I'm saying?
What are you doing? You're in a bar fight with gray hair. What the fuck is
what
wrong
the
with you?
Your problem? Every time I see these guys on the internet fist fighting in stadiums and shit, I'm like, you're 52.
What
bro.
Is wrong with you? You're a grown ass man paying for parking. What the fuck is
your
wrong with you?
Your kid drove you here like son of
you're
a fuck.
You're drunk. You're drunk in the second quarter.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not halftime yet, you
asshole.
What
the fuck is wrong with you? It ain't even a playoff game. I see these people. I was like, gee, are you out of your mind?
I see that and I'm like, God. I mean, that was in my 20s. Like, yes. I fist fought.
If you're old enough to grow a beard and you're on a skateboard, I'm aiming for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, dude, thank you so much for coming on here. This has been a lot of fun, man. I appreciate it.
Have we learned anything?
We've learned quite a bit and nothing at all at the same time.
I don't feel any difference.
Do me a favor and please, one more time, promote anything you want. The podcast, all of it.
My podcast, July 23rd, is called 30 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. I hope you guys subscribe to it. CBS All Access, Why Women Kill is going to drop in August. And there's a calendar of stand-up dates coming up. And I hope to see you soon. And I hope to see you again, brother. This was a lot of fun.
You will see me again for sure, brother. Thank you.
Be good.
I am Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.